I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
This is Buried Truths. I'm Hank Klibanoff. You know, I think it's safe to say that today, November 24th, was significant and perhaps historic in the annals of criminal justice in the South. You know the story. For many decades, in case after case after case, white people in the South have somehow managed to avoid conviction, often they've even avoided prosecution, for taking the lives of black men. Now, I'm not saying never. I'm just saying, historically, hardly ever. But today, in a county that's about 70% white, a jury that was about 92% white delivered multiple guilty verdicts against three white men who, armed with a shotgun and a .357 Magnum and commandeering two trucks on a quiet street on the Georgia coast, chased and killed a lone black jogger in February 2020. In this episode of Buried Truths, WABE's Rose Scott, host of the program Closer Look here in Atlanta, spoke with me minutes after the verdict was read in court. Then I spoke with Lisa Hagen, WABE's reporter on the scene at the trial, about what she saw and heard in and around the courtroom today. Let's start with Superior Court Judge Timothy Walmsley, reading the verdict in the Glynn County Courthouse this afternoon.
Madam Foreperson, I understand you have reached a verdict as to each defendant.
We have.
If you could please hand your verdict forms to the sheriff. All right. I'm going to go ahead and address each one of these verdict forms separately. The first verdict form I have is the State of Georgia versus Travis McMichael. Mr. McMichael, please stand. Verdict is as follows. In the Superior Court of Glynn County, State of Georgia, the State of Georgia versus Travis McMichael, case number CR000433. Jury verdict form. Count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. I'm going to ask that whoever just made an outburst be removed from the court, please. As this court has indicated, I ask that there be no outbursts in the court, and I expect as much from the gallery. Please respect the court's desire for this as we move forward. Count two, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count three, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count four, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count five, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count six, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count seven, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count eight, false imprisonment. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count nine, criminal attempt to commit a felony. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Dated this 24th day of November, 2021, signed by the foreperson. As to Gregory McMichael. In the Superior Court of Glynn County, the State of Georgia versus Greg McMichael, case number CR 200433. Jury verdict form. Count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, not guilty. Count two, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count three, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count four, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count five, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count six, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count seven, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count eight, false imprisonment. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. Count nine, criminal attempt to commit a felony. We, the jury, find the defendant, Greg McMichael, guilty. This 24th day of November, 2021, signed by the foreperson. As to William R. Bryan, in the Superior Court of Glynn County, State of Georgia, State of Georgia versus William R. Bryan, case number CR2000433, jury verdict form. Count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan not guilty. Count two, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan not guilty. Count three, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan guilty. Count four, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan guilty. Count five, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan guilty. Count six, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan not guilty. Count seven, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan guilty. Count eight, false imprisonment. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan guilty. Count nine, criminal attempt to commit a felony. We, the jury, find the defendant William R. Bryan guilty. Signed this 24th day of November by the foreperson.
This is WABE News. I'm Rose Scott. For now, I want to bring on to the show longtime civil rights journalist, now a professor over at Emory University. He's been on this program many times. Of course, he's the host of WABE's podcast, Barry Truths, which has been covering this case and following this. Of course, I'm talking about Hank Klibanoff. Hank, thanks for taking time. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to be with you today, Rose.
Lots to unpack here, but let's just begin with since last February. Since all of this happened in this case, and obviously coming at a time last year with everything with George Floyd, of course, a polarizing political year, the pandemic, everything going on. Where do you place this case in terms of this importance, not just of the verdict here, but in how this nation and issues that relates to race and social justice and all of that?
Well, I do have to start with the verdict because it's remarkable, and it so runs against the grain of history and in Georgia and throughout much of the South. Is just too rare that you find that white people are found guilty of killing black people, and particularly when the white people challenge it and when they rely on the self-defense alibi. It's a remarkable judgment, and I think it definitely distinguishes Georgia from a lot of the other cases that have come by just in recent years. It's remarkable how few of them sort of went against the white people, the white police officers or others who killed black people. This is unusual, and I think it's historic.
Hank, given all the other optics surrounding this, look, it's the South. It's a young black man, unarmed. It's not one, not two, but three individuals. And you have covered so many of these cases in terms of unsolved civil rights cases. Mm-hmm. And when you look back on those cases, Hank, and then this one, something that's in the moment that we are all living in, can you even begin to make the comparison?
We're in a different time. Mm-hmm. We truly are. We sometimes want to say, gosh, but it doesn't look like it. And that's true in many ways. Every day it looks like we've gone back. In fact, we said in this and doing Ahmaud Arbery for, you know, a period of time there. It looked like 2020 was 1950. Mm-hmm. But this is different. And, I mean, just a quick thought on this was, you know, you had the Republican governor of the state come out strongly critical of the three men who chased him, calling it savage what they did, calling it brutal. You had the attorney general, the Republican attorney general, doing that. The head of the GBI, who had been a former district attorney, but you know, Republican strike. Mm-hmm. They all came out. Governors didn't used to do this. You know, when mm-hmm. Byron Dillon Beckwith went on trial in Mississippi mm-hmm. for killing Medgar Evers, who walked into the courtroom to shake his hand? The former governor of Mississippi, Ross Barnett. So I think this represents a real shift, and I think it shows that people of all political persuasions can find a way to reach agreement on what justice looks like.
Hank, there's something else here, because up until this happened, Georgia's citizens' arrest law that was still on the books, and we know that that had been used before, it took a killing, which we now know is a murder, which a lot of people had come to that conclusion even before the trial, that it took something like this to even change that, given the history of not just in Georgia, but in this nation of folks using that, in particular where we know the underlying at the core was racism or racial bias.
And I'm not going to say that these aren't hard fought wins and that it didn't take the sort of a catalytic shock to the body politic of Georgia, because there was a visual, demonstrably grotesque video. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's clearly the main difference here. You know, if this had been done, keep in mind, this is what should temper our celebration, mm-hmm. is that on the day of the killing, the police officers, and we learned this during the trial, are sitting there watching the video. Mm-hmm. So we may not have gotten it until May. It may not have gone public until May, but in February of 2020, the day Ahmaud killed, Roddy Bryan's video is visible, as are videos from people's doorbells and mm-hmm. things like that. None of these police officers brought that out between February and May, you know, so it could have gone the other way, and we'd be looking at this as a cold case 50 years from now.
Well, and speaking of going the other way, Jay Bookman just tweeted, of course you're familiar with Jay, that just to think two district attorneys wanted all of this to go away.
That's right. That's right. Jackie Johnson, who now has went away because the voters of Glenn County and that district down there voted her out. And George Barnhill, who continues to be a district attorney down there and presumably is still under investigation by the Department of Justice mm-hmm. and maybe the Attorney General's office for his role, and very quickly declaring that this was not a criminal act by these three men. They acted in self-defense and they acted justifiably. And that if anybody was the problem, it was Ahmaud Arbery. And Mr. Barnhill has still not had to answer for that.
We heard earlier in our program, we played a clip from the Reverend Al Sharpton that talked about the testimony that was given, the angles that were given regarding who Ahmaud Arbery was, the descriptors that were used, and how his mother and his father and other family members and friends and loved ones had to hear these, what he called, despicable descriptions. But it's a court case, so that's not surprising. But it's a trend that has happened so much in this nation when it comes to the defense. You paint the victim, you paint the person that who was killed as someone who was, that it was justified in taking their life. That's from the old playbook, Hank.
It is. And guess what? It didn't work. I mean, I can't wait to hear, you know, jurors usually go after, right now, are probably starting to meet with the attorneys and do a little downloading on, you know, why they reached the verdict so quickly, first of all, and why they reached the verdict that they did. And they will say to the lawyers, well, if you had brought on another person to say this, or if you'd done this, you know, and the lawyers walk away fully knowledgeable about why the decision went their way or went against them. And I can't help but wonder if the lawyers are going to walk away saying, particularly Linda Hogue, that mm-hmm. she absolutely should not have referenced Ahmaud Arbery's hygiene. when she talked about, you know, his dirty toenails. It just really was an echo, as you say, of just a completely different time.
Hank, were you surprised that a verdict did come in on day two, and not even a full day?
Yeah, I was surprised, except for the fact that tomorrow is Thanksgiving, and no one wants to be hung up and over bringing it back till Friday. But I also think, you know, what I really like about the decision is that it's split in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
They did not bring felony murder against, you know, Greg McMichael and Roddy Bryant. They didn't bring certain charges against those two that they did bring against Travis. It was a thoughtful decision, it seems to have been.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably lawyers will look at it and say thoughtful and logical the way they reached it. I haven't studied it closely enough, but I think they were ready. They walked into that, I'm assuming they walked into their deliberations with really clear ideas about what they wanted to do, which is a great vote of confidence in the prosecution in the case that they put forward.
And earlier today, before the jury did return to deliberations, they wanted to hear the 911 call. They asked to hear that call. The judge did grant that. Through your lens, or from your viewpoint, what do you suspect that was about?
As you know, there are several 911 tapes. And the one that I just got my attention, and we played it a couple of times in our podcast on Barry Truth on the Ahmaud Arbery case, was that the first call, I guess, from the neighbor, in which she says to the neighbor who's reporting a black man is inside the house across the street, and she says, "What's he doing wrong?"
Mm-hmm.
And the guy never answers.
Never answered.
And then she repeats it. "Yeah, yes, sir, I understand, but what's he doing wrong?" And that, to me, it should be sort of the headline of all the stories that came out immediately after that. What's he doing wrong? Because the answer that the jury has decided was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, was the question that the defense never answered in a way that was suspicious, that, you know, confirmed suspicions of Ahmaud Arbery.
Hank, as mentioned with your podcast that you host, Barry Truths, and you all made sure you focused on who Ahmaud Arbery was. You spoke to friends and family members, I believe. For our listeners, what do you want them to know about Ahmaud Arbery now?
You know, young people are full of conflict and present different faces at different times. You know, the people who played football with him were big fans of his. They loved him. He was all heart. He would do anything for his teammates, and they grieved over him, all of his friends. You saw the people who ran. And these are people who went on to, whether it's his friends who went on to Morehouse or his friends who went on to the Detroit Lions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had just a lot of friends. Did he have some trouble? Later, he did. And frankly, the defense at one point painted him as someone who had kind of lost his way. I think we said something like that in the podcast. Young people do. And, you know, I wish everything were going in the direction that he could have found a clear path. And it turns out his family says he had actually done that.
Mm-hmm.
After he'd run into those troubles, and he knew what he was going to do. He was going to continue to head toward becoming an electrician. I want everybody to say people are complex and not to jump to conclusions and not to assume that when a black person's doing something, that they're doing it with criminal intent.
Hmm. Hank, as always, you and I have had so many conversations as it relates to not only just the cases you've covered for so many decades and what you continue to do to encourage a new generation to tackle some of these horrendous, complex cases that have yet to be solved. And there are so many still out there, Hank.
There are. But on the other side, I got great students, and there are a lot more of them who are ready to look at the students. So that's always good.
And we will continue to listen to Barry Truths, Emory University Professor of Practice in English and Creative Writing, Hank Klibanoff.
Now, before moving on, I'd like to play for you a short excerpt. It's a conversation between WABE host Jim Burris talking here with the station's legal analyst, Paige Pate.
Well, the reason we talked to you is for some analysis and the what next type of questions, and we certainly have those. If you could, though, first break down for us the not guilty murder charges. Roddy Bryan and Greg McMichael, for example, were found not guilty of malice murder, but still guilty of, you know, regular old murder. Why that distinction?
Well, Jim, I think the easiest way to think about it is malice murder in Georgia is basically where you intend to kill someone and you have no justification. And the jury clearly thought that's what happened with Travis McMichael. He had the shotgun. He intended to kill Ahmaud Arbery. They rejected citizen's arrest and self-defense. Now, felony murder, you don't have to intend to kill anyone. In fact, that's not the definition of felony murder. Felony murder is when you're committing some other felony offense and somebody dies as a result of it. So what the jury found was that Greg McMichael was committing aggravated assault, maybe by pointing his pistol at Ahmaud Arbery, maybe by using the truck, and Ahmaud Arbery died. Same analysis for William Bryan. He was using his truck to try to pin in Ahmaud Arbery. That's false imprisonment. The jury found him guilty of that. And since Ahmaud Arbery died as a result, it's felony murder.
The outcome the same, however, meaning that no matter which type of murder, they will spend the rest of their lives in jail. Is that correct?
That is correct. The only issue for the judge now is to determine whether it's going to be a life sentence with the possibility of parole or without the possibility of parole. And that's what the judge is going to decide, I think, in just a few weeks.
Kevin Goff, the attorney for William Roddy Bryan, has requested a new trial. What is the standard for the judge granting that?
Well, the judge has to find some legal error or believe that this was an unjust result, that the verdict was not supported by the evidence. I cannot see that happening. I mean, obviously, this judge handled the case, I think, very patiently. I think his legal rulings were correct. So they'll have a motion for new trial. They're entitled to a hearing. But ultimately, I think their only chance at a reversal will be with the Georgia Supreme Court. And even there, I think it's very remote.
A federal hate crimes trial is pending at this point. What would that add? And can anything new come out of it, do you think?
Well, yes. The federal trial will focus on federal civil rights violations, hate crimes, and that you will see in that case much more evidence of racial prejudice. We'll probably hear the text messages, social media posts, things of that nature to show a racial bias, because that's important on the federal charge. If they're convicted in federal court because someone died as a result of their offense, they get life there. But what it means really for the McMichaels and Mr. Bryan is not much, because they're going to be serving a life sentence in a Georgia state prison. They'll go over for the federal trial, then they'll come back to Georgia state prison. And if some point they're released, then they go to federal custody and start all over again. So it's a lengthy sentence.
Anything about what happened today, the verdict, the reaction, anything that sticks out with you?
No, I think the verdict was consistent with the evidence and consistent with the law. I think it's interesting now to watch what's happening with the defense lawyers. I know all of these lawyers. Some of them, you know, I've known for decades. And, you know, these are people that are not normally associated with this type of behavior or this type of belief or position. But they made some critical errors. And I don't mean strategy errors. I just mean just did stupid things during this trial that I think they're now trying to reconcile and hopefully will one day be able to explain. And so we can better understand why they did what they did.
And you're talking some of perhaps the racially charged comments, including talking about the number of Black clergy in the audience.
That's one thing. And then the argument during closing arguments by Greg McMichael's lawyer about the dirty long toenails. And I just, you know, as far as a defense strategy, I don't understand it. And it was clearly hurtful. And I just think it was unnecessary.
That was WABE's Jim Burris talking with the station's legal analyst, Paige Pate. Next, we move on to my conversation with WABE's Lisa Hagen, the reporter who has been covering the trial for Barry Truth and WABE for about a month down in Glenn County. Lisa, How are you?
I'm not sure yet. I do feel like I've witnessed a piece of history yet, but I've yet to process everything that's happened. I'm more busy just sort of filing news.
Sure. But I imagine everyone's walking around as if in a surreal scene there because of the verdict. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Except, you know, it's interesting. Everyone that I did speak to, sort of supporters of the family who were coming out, all sort of said, well, of course they were guilty, and didn't actually seem to express as much shock as I certainly felt, and I think many people might be feeling right now about this verdict.
So you interviewed several people, family and others. Why don't you walk us through some of the people you spoke with?
Sure. So, you know, what happened is there was a giant press gaggle, as there has been, you know, ever growing outside of the courtroom. And today we saw Arbery's parents come out holding hands with their lawyers and Al Sharpton, and sort of all walking together, you know, hands raised, a real moment of triumph. There were lots of cheers outside. And we heard Wanda Cooper Jones, you know, say something that she's been saying all along, which I think really points to the dark days that she went through at the beginning of this case, of not having any idea what was going on and not getting any answers about why her son was dead.
Tell you the truth, I never saw this day back in 2020. Mm-hmm. I never thought this day would come, but God is good.
Lisa, of course, the makeup of the racial makeup of the jury, 11 whites, 1 black, is a sore that probably will never quite heal, regardless of the verdict. And I understand Al Sharpton spoke about that today.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think people were very disappointed when that news came out late in jury selection, that's what this jury was going to look like. And it was shocking for a lot of people to hear a judge say, yes, it looks like, you know, there's been some racial discrimination here, and still allow that jury to go forward. But Reverend Al Sharpton today took a few moments actually to talk about the fact that white people and black people came together over this case.
And let the word go forth all over the world, yes, that a jury of 11 whites, yes, and 1 black,
come on,
in the deep South, stood up in the courtroom and said that black lives do matter.
Of course, probably the star of the show was Linda Donikoski, the prosecuting attorney from Cobb County, who took over after the preliminary hearing had already been held and was added to the case. She was out there, and I understand she spoke today.
Yes. And it was interesting, you know, Al Sharpton did also mention he's not in the habit of thanking prosecutors, but he did, of course, thank Linda Donikoski, who came out definitely to cheers. And I would say that she, you know, it was very much appreciated by the crowd who was there. She talked about it being a team effort with, you know, her entire office and her co-counsel. And here's a cut from her.
Because the jury system works in this country. Mm-hmm. And when you present the truth to people and they can see it,
right,
they will do the right thing.
Sure? Come on.
That's right. And that's what
Come
this jury did today, right, in getting justice for Ahmaud Arbery. Right. Thank you.
So, Lisa, the courtroom, of course, only holds so many people. And of all the people who were down there, few of those were able to get into the courtroom and actually hear and see the verdict come down. Tell us about your experience in hearing about the verdict.
Yeah, so I was sort of crouched down at the foot of all of the tripods of the, you know, probably 40 cameras, news cameras that were outside. And it was interesting. You know, so much of this has been live streamed and you know, we saw people looking down at their phones, and then suddenly cheers went up. And you could hear, you know, people shouting, "Justice for Ahmaud, justice for Ahmaud." More cheers coming as we heard, you know, every time we heard the judge read a new, you know, guilty verdict, there were more cheers. you could hear a few sort of disappointed noises from the crowd as you know, not all of the malice murder charges stuck for every defendant. But overall, it just started getting louder and louder. And I think also amidst, you know, in waiting outside for the family to come out, amidst the rhythmic chanting of Ahmaud Arbery's name outside, people also took the time to talk about how justice isn't fully served in this case, because we need to also talk about DA Jackie Johnson.
And she's going to stand trial on her own, right?
That's right.
Have alleged to have basically tried to sabotage this prosecution. Of course, she said she did not and has said that from the very beginning.
But it's clear that she is on the minds of people here in Brunswick.
So we have ahead of us a couple of things. We do have a Jackie Johnson trial at some point. And you know, what awaits us is a federal prosecution of the three men, the two McMichaels and Mr. Bryan. Is that correct?
That's right. That'll start in February.
So that'll be in February, and it'll go over different issues. It's, you know, for those who thought that all of the racial components of this case would come to the fore and come to the fore quite controversially and sensitively in this trial that just ended, they probably were disappointed because none of that came up. I think Prosecutor Donikoski made one reference to a black man jogging. That was the only invocation of race that she brought into the case. But the feds, when they bring their case, that'll be very heavily about race because they're trying the three men on hate crimes. And the whole substance of that will be penetrating the question of whether or not these men acted with racial intent.
That's right. And I think, you know, a lot of things were left out in this trial, not only, like you say, in the arguments and the way that the lawyers argued the case, but bits of evidence, you know, the vanity plate that the McMichaels had on their truck, some of the social media posts, also, you know, alleged comments that were made, I guess, to one of the first arriving officers about, you know, using the N-word, that kind of stuff. All of that we are likely to see in the federal case. And I will say also that throughout, you know, it's clear that not bringing race so much into her argument was part of a strategy that seems to have worked here on the part of the prosecution. And throughout, you know, the family and the family's lawyers really expressed a lot of gratitude and confidence in the way Linda Donikoski handled this case.
Earlier, when I referred to Linda Donikoski as the star of the day outside the courthouse after the verdict, but probably there's someone else who may even eclipse Linda Donikoski for popularity on the scene. Can you tell us about Annie Polite?
Miss Polite is an 87-year-old Glynn County resident, and she has been outside the courthouse every day since before jury selection even started. And, you know, there have been groups of activists, some local, some coming from other spots, showing up, you know, on various days for important moments of this trial. But one person, this woman, Miss Polite, has been out there every day, and here she explains why.
Because I felt, as a citizen of Brunswick and Glen, they need to see that somebody here care about them and want to support them in any way that we can. And it's the only right thing to do.
Lisa, thank you so much for your time. You've had not just a long day, but a long month. And I'm so grateful that you've given us your time today and on previous occasions. Lisa is a reporter at WABE. She was a Pulitzer Prize winner in the last round of Pulitzers for her work on a podcast called No Compromise that several NPR stations participated in. And it's been an honor to have you with us, Lisa.
Thank you. It's been an honor to talk with you, Hank.
In my Georgia Civil Rights Cold Cases class at Emory, which serves as the research arm for the stories you hear on Buried Truths, I hold fast to a well-established journalism standard. A killing cannot, should not, be called a murder until there's been an adjudication of murder by a judge or a jury. So I've trained my students and myself to refer to killings, not murders. And you'll hear that in the Ahmaud Arbery season of Buried Truths, as well as the earlier seasons. But today, that changed. Officially, it can now be said, Greg and Travis McMichael and William Roddy Bryan murdered Ahmaud Arbery. Thanks again to Lisa Hagen, Rose Scott, Jim Burris, and Paige Pate for being part of this episode. Thanks also to some key players behind the scenes, including Richard Hallex, Dave Barriswain, Richard Firth, and Alex Helmick. I'm Hank Klibanoff. Buried Truths is a production of WABE Atlanta.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you donated to WABE yet? I know you've heard us talking about why it's important, but it doesn't have to be this big decision. You can give at whatever amount fits your budget. It can be a spur-of-the-moment thing. You already get so much out of public radio, so just go for it. Visit wabe.org/donate and become a member right now. And thank you.